live from the Colorado Media School campus in the GoMileHigh.com studios, it's time for The Dish. Now, here's Blake.
I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice.
Gordon.
That's fantastic!
And Paul.
And I'm not surprised.
Welcome to The Dish on GoMileHigh.com. I'm Paul here with Blake, and we got Gordon on the board. Dan supervising tonight. Let's get right into it. Nuggets talk. So tonight, 7:10 p.m., we got the Nuggets taking on the T-Wolves. Our Nuggets are at home. A little bit of bad news, though. Jamal Murray out with some knee soreness, and then Zeke Nagy out with a shoulder. Kind of big hits for us. So, Blake, what do you think? Do you think Nuggets still pull it out even though they're dealing with these injuries right now?
I think that the Nuggets are going to be good on the victory front, but the thing that makes me most sad about Jamal Murray, man needs some rest on his knees, but I had a two-leg parlay going into this. Jokic over 8.5 assists and Murray over 22.5 points. So now we just got to hope for the push. Now I have to hope that Jokic just gets those 8.5 assists and DraftKings decides to be nice and let the bet stand, and we'll be all right. But I also had a two-legger with the Nuggets money line, which I combined with the Avalanche money line, and that one's looking pretty good. Avalanche in the lead right now. So overall, feeling all right. Glad Jamal will get a little bit of rest. I'm hoping that knee soreness isn't too serious, but Nuggets still getting that dub.
I'm with you as well. I feel like the Nuggets are going to get it done. I think Jokic and Gordon are going to have a really big game teaming up together. But I'm with you. My big worry is not so much the victory tonight. It's more so the fact that Murray is out with knee soreness. You know, coming off of that catastrophic knee injury, you know, we don't know exactly what knee it is, you know, that's dealing with the soreness. But it's got to put some worry in your mind as his minutes have gone up. He's, you know, consistently been playing about 36 minutes a game now. You know, heading into the All-Star weekend, you know, fortunately he'll get some time off there. But as we're getting ready for the playoffs, it's got to kind of put some kind of worry in your mind that, you know, will Murray be able to last throughout the entire playoffs for the Nuggets? And he's, you know, he's a very key piece of the team and someone we're going to need if we want to win that championship this year.
For sure. I think that's where a lot of the fear comes from when you see this knee soreness is that technically he should have been rested since he didn't even make the trip the last game we played in Minnesota just a couple days ago. Yeah, that definitely does carry a little bit of spookiness, having knee soreness after he's been rested. But I'm telling myself it's just a little bit of letting him rest on that knee. And as long as that goes forward with time management, he's had a couple back-to-backs that he's played. I wasn't sure if I was going to see him in any back-to-backs until much later in the season. So the fact that we've seen Jamal on back-to-backs and still putting up good scoring, think we'll be okay going into the playoffs, especially with these management games, as long as that's all this one is, for sure.
Yeah, hopefully it's just a management game. It's not more to it. And, you know, I'm sure they're working to keep him on the best track possible. And then hopefully Zeke Nagy as well, not want to discredit him as being an important member of the squad. We definitely like him back in the lineup. So hopefully it's nothing too serious, you know, just something to rest him up, get him feeling 100%. But yeah, I'm picking the Nuggets to take this one, especially at home. I think Jokic, we saw earlier, he's in the Pinky Blinders attire tonight, so that's just pretty much a guarantee for a triple-double. Aaron Gordon's sure to go off for a double-double, I would say. So I feel like this is going to be a big win for the Nuggets, especially coming off the last time they faced the T-Wolves with a very very hurt, very diminished squad and got smashed there. So I feel like this is going to be a nice rebound game for the Nuggets.
Yeah, and I think what you brought up AG there, and I think he's going to be a big piece to watch tonight. Dan was talking on one of the post-game shows a while back about how big of a piece Aaron Gordon is for defense for the Nuggets, and this is a game where that's really going to be apparent because he'll be guarding Anthony Edwards, one of the top scoring, well, the top scorer for Minnesota. Edwards averaging 24.7 points per game. AG going to have his hands full on that one. So hopefully that Aaron Gordon defense stays strong, keeps Anthony Edwards scoring down a little bit. But, you know, one thing talking about scoring that spooks me now thinking about Jamal being out is that before this game I was pretty stoked because the Wolves are allowing 36.6% from three, which is good for the 24th highest in the league. So they're susceptible to giving up quite a few long balls, but Jamal Murray's kind of one of our big long ball guys. That leaves us with MPJ. Prior to this whole Bones stuff, we would be saying Bones as well, but now really we've just got got MPJ throwing up like a dozen attempts, I imagine, and that kind of takes away that aspect of going against Minnesota is taking advantage of that three ball.
Yeah, and 100% agree with you. That's definitely going to be a huge hit for the Nuggets because Smalls is such a phenomenal sharpshooter, and losing out on that advantage that we had, it's going to be tough. But hopefully MPJ can at least turn it on kind of early, really find his rhythm, because he's kind of a guy that he can knock down. He knocked down the three. He's a good shooter. I don't want to discredit that, but I feel like he's been pretty streaky as of late. So hopefully he can find some consistency tonight, because this is where a game where he could really thrive and, you know, go off for the Nuggets and, you know, show that, you know, even with Murray out with the soreness, we're still very much a threat from beyond the arc.
Yep. And on the opposite side, I think that our defensive side is going to have to focus in the paint, though. Minnesota is going to look to attack the basket tonight. The Nuggets are ranked, just like Minnesota's ranked 24th from beyond the three, the Nuggets are ranked 24th in the league in regards to points given up in the paint, averaging 52.3 given up per game, and they're tied for last over the last three games in points per game given up, averaging 57.3 in the last three games they've played given up in the paint. So the Nuggets got to lock down that key big time.
100%. And Jokic will have his hands full with Rudy Gobert, definitely a big body, you know, someone that crashes the boards and stuff like that. So hopefully Jokic won't have to do too much. I mean, it's tough to say because Jokic does everything, but, you know, hopefully he's not having to, you know what I'm saying? Like, hopefully he's not putting too much energy into having to shut down Gobert, that it affects his offense, you know. So hopefully it's the Nuggets are able to work it out, protect the paint, and have a good night. Because this is, you know, after the last game with Minnesota and all the trash talk going back and forth, I think this is a game where the Nuggets really just need to hammer it home. Like, we're the better team. You got fluke wins when we're, you know, depleted, and we're the best team in the West. I think this needs to be a statement kind of game.
For sure. It's gotten so bad with Minnesota talking smack on the Nuggets, thinking that they, like, are actually competition for us. I had myself convinced that they beat us the last two games, not just the last one, but the one before the last one where, by the way, we rested five guys that didn't even make the trip. We beat them the game before that. So, I mean, I'm letting these jabrones convince me of stuff that didn't even happen. So, yeah, I'm real stoked to kind of silence that crowd for sure.
Yeah, it's been weird. The Minnesota fans have been very weird. Like, it's one of those things where you get some kind of W and it's like, yeah, we beat the Nuggets. We smashed the Nuggets.
Hey, like, guess what? You're like the thrift shop Nuggets. Almost like a bunch of your team is from the Nuggets. Like, jeez. And then I think tonight we can also expect a lot of missed free throws. That's going to be the ugly part of this game. Minnesota 23rd. And made free throws, while Denver has the second lowest percentage in the entire league. That percentage just 74.9% from the stripe. That means every four free throws they're going up there and lobbing up, they're only making three of them. So one out of every four is a miss. Terrible. You're getting paid to do this, guys.
Yeah. That I didn't realize the Nuggets were that bad from the stripe.
Best in the three-point shooting in the entire league, but worst from the stripe. How does that make sense?
Dude, it doesn't. And, like, I don't want to bring my skill level into this, but back in my prime, I was a free throw McGee. They were like, oh, technical? Send Paul to the stripe. That's getting knocked down. Well, I'll say three-pointers. So that's crazy that there's such killers from beyond the arc, but when it comes to free throws, absolutely struggling. And that's something that they're going to need to clean up heading into the playoffs, because how many times do we see time and time again in the playoffs, that's where it comes down to it. You know, both teams playing their hardest, and it's going to come down to free throws. And if the Nuggets are only knocking down, you know, three of the four, we're at such a disadvantage when it comes to that clutch time moment.
Huge chunk of points you're missing out on.
I hope that's something that can be hopefully that's something that can be fixed after the All-Star break. I hope we can turn it around and get our free throw percentage matching our 3-point percentage, because that's atrocious, and that has me really nervous for the play. I didn't realize we're that bad. I knew we were bad from the stripe, but when you say the actual percentage, I'm like, oh man, we're kind of screwed because of playoffs time.
A low C if you were in school, that would be graded. Shoo-wee.
I would have been grounded. I'm grounded for sure.
Car taken away.
But continuing Nuggets talk, we got to talk about Bones Highland. He hasn't played the last few games, so everyone's thought process is, all right, obviously he's being moved, but still hasn't moved. The trade deadline is Thursday. He was selected by Team Darren, Darren Williams, for the Rising Stars Challenge, and it's going to be a four-team tournament. The teams will race to score 40 points. The final game is 25, and you know, it's awesome that Bones got picked up by Darren Williams. Hopefully his mindset is kind of there, but do you think he gets moved? Do you think he
he has a big day with Rising Star Challenge. Like, what do you expect from Bones going forward after all this game?
I think Bones will play pretty well in this game. Anyway, I think he'll use it as an opportunity to showcase himself after the last under the banner.
But we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we've got to talk LeBron. The scoring record is in reach tonight versus the Thunder. Does he do it? We'll find out when we come back. I'm Paul Masek with Blake and Gordon. We'll be right back.
I'm taking a trip over to Tibet, you know, see the sights, climb a hill or two. But I remember, oh man, I got one guy out here who I actually know. So I give an old ringy-dingy to the Lama, you know, the Dalai Lama, his laminescence, flowing robes, grace, bald, striking, really. I says to the Lama, hey, you remember that round I caddied for you down in Shangri-La? Well, apparently some station out in Lakewood taped the whole thing. See, the Lama's a big hitter. Nailed two eagles in a row that day. Well, he says, what station could have possibly gotten all the way out to my sacred holy lands, the Shangri? I says it was none other than Go Mile High Dicam, Lama. They got the best sports coverage in the state. The Lama actually tips me this time, 2-1. So he pretty much stiffed me again. But I got him hooked on GoMileHigh.com. So I got that going for me, which is nice.
That's great.
GoMileHigh.com.
Trying to make plans for this weekend?
I can't wait to see what he brings me.
Don't know what to do to kill time?
Pretty sure you just answered your own question.
Tune in every Wednesday.
Well, we're waiting.
From 3 until 4.
What you talking about?
Sports. Must-see events and many more. Only on GoMileHigh.com.
Every day, across this country, hundreds of college radio stations take to the air, broadcasting music and programming that you won't hear anywhere else.
It's one of the last places where people can really be able to actually say what they want to say.
Without it, you wouldn't have a place for local artists to perform. Certain people need to have a chance, a fighting chance, and college radio is that place for it.
College radio changes the lives of those who are involved with it and can change those who listen to it too.
This is where we start out, you know? From getting all this great experience working in college radio, it makes you want to work in real radio.
College radio means finding yourself. It helped me find what I wanted to do in not only school, but in life.
So support college radio by continuing to listen to this station and supporting the students who make it happen. College radio, now, more than ever. A message brought to you by this station and the College Radio Foundation. For more information, please visit collegeradio.org.
While catching a gnarly wave surfing the coast of Hawaii, trying to pick up that girl at the bar that's been staring at you all night long, getting into a deadly fist fight with a kangaroo, unexpected choking on the turkey sandwich you're eating.
There's a million places you'd never consider to text, so why do it while driving? Please stop the text, and together we can stop the wrecks.
While rapping on stage in front of a sold-out audience. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Get the message at stopthetext.stoptherex.org.
You're listening to The Dish on GoMileHigh.com.
Hey, I'm not surprised.
Let's get it all!
Welcome back to The Dish on GoMileHigh.com. I'm Paul, here with Blake. We got Gordon on the board, Dan supervising. Get back to the morning. Talk LeBron. All-time scoring record tonight. He needs 36 points to pass Kareem, and he plays the Thunder at Crypto 8 p.m. tonight. So, Blake, what do you think? Is tonight the night? Does he get it done? Is it all over? Do we leave? Do we enter tomorrow as LeBron James, the all-time leading scorer in the NBA?
I was solid no. I thought it was going to be against the Bucks until I realized that if I'm going to talk about Jokic dressing up and that leading to a great game, following the same logic, LeBron showed up tonight to Crypto.com Arena looking pretty fly. I mean, I do not like the guy one bit, but that suit, tailored to perfection. It's all black.
It looks like a villain kind of
super, yeah,
super,
good point.
Super
yeah.
villain look, which yep. that's like, oh, he's going to get it tonight.
And so, yeah, when I saw that picture, I was like, I went from a hard no to, whoa, I think he might actually be ready to do it. But, I mean, the last time he scored 36 or more in a game was when he scored 41 in overtime at Boston on January 28th, and he's done it 9 times this season. Tonight again? Possibly. I think you come in looking dapper like that, but I don't know. He probably also knows that everybody, like, there's usually a lot of cameras on the guy, but now there's even more cameras on the guy, so maybe he just dressed flossy because he knows that the attention's on him and he's going to stretch it over 2 games, but we'll see.
Yeah, I had to look it up because I did not see his outfit, and after years, like, man, that's a pretty badass outfit. That is raw. He came in looking so cool. Like, just the black on black. And, like, I'm not even a fan of, like, when guys do, like, the button down where they got it kind of open. But on him, it works. He looks like a destroyer right now. He looks like he's getting 36. No doubt. Like, that's just a guarantee.
And I guess that Kareem, the night that he broke it, he was dressed in all black as well. So I don't know if that's a nod to that or not. But seems like it could potentially be.
I hope so. I think that'd be really cool. It was kind of like how we were talking about the show the other day, how Sean Payton intentionally did the Bronco emblem incorrect to show that we're going up, sky's the limit. I like that if it's a playoff of Kareem wore all black the night he broke it, I'm going to wear all black the night I break it. I love little details like that. It just it does something for the legacy of the moment, I guess you could say, just really paying your respect. And I don't know. That's awesome.
Side note in regards to, because you said paying respect, and you triggered me just slightly on something. So after I gave LeBron a compliment, I'm going to turn around and backhand him here for a sec. So I saw in an interview from either yesterday or today, but I saw it this morning on my Twitter feed, and he like straight up said that he sees himself as the GOAT. Like, you don't say that. You're not allowed to say that. You can't just come out and be like, I am the GOAT. Like, you have to do the coy. Like, I don't care what you think. You just have to play the game. You have to be like, oh, those other guys are really good, and I mean, I'm great, but those guys are great, so you never know, you know? You got to do the whole rigmarole answer. You can't just straight up say, yep, I view it as myself, and yeah, that MJ guy, he can get hosed, but it really really got on my bad side with that.
And I feel you. And I get it. I'm usually not a fan of stuff like that, but I don't know. Coming from LeBron, I'll allow it. I don't know. It just, I think there's always so much talk in the NBA, specifically of GOAT, is like, you know, MJ, da da da, Kobe. There's always this argument, For someone to finally just be like, no, it's me, I respect that. And I'm fine with it. You know what? I'm tired of this argument. LeBron has stamped it. He's the GOAT. LeBron's the GOAT. No one else stepped up and said anything. They're all doing the whole, oh, you know, I would say it's him. You know, if we play each other, who knows? Maybe I'll get some moves. He'll get some moves. But I like that LeBron's finally just like, nah, it's me. I'm the greatest of all time. I'll take it. You know, I'll take it. But I get where you're coming from. That's such a vain thing. Other people are supposed to talk about your greatness, not you talk about your own greatness.
I get you have the ego, but you don't got to rub it in my face.
Exactly.
Leave it zipped up. Keep it tucked away.
I'm with you, but also I'm glad someone's finally like, it's me. There's no debate anymore. Just end it. I'm the best.
But I sure would be glad if I was one of the people that. So when I looked at 220 this afternoon at tickpick.com for if I wanted to fly out to LA, which obviously I don't have the means to do that. But if I did, I looked at the cost of tickets, and the cheapest tickets for tonight's game were as far down as $147. And earlier this week, we were talking about the cheapest was kind of tied with the Bucks at about $500 to $600. So for those people, if they got in when those tickets dropped to that like 150 per, and then he breaks it tonight, boy, you'd feel like a king, because those Bucks tickets for the next night, the cheapest ticket when I looked at the same time was still $644. So man, that'd suck to still be buying those expensive ones, have somebody get it 6 times cheaper, 5 times cheaper than you did, and then you don't even get to see it anyways.
Oh my gosh. Now, if that does happen, do you think that'll be a thing? Do you think people will be complaining about this, like refunds? Do you think this will be a mass, like, because fans have been very, I don't want to use the term entitled, but there's been, like, you know, with LeBron, anytime he doesn't play, people are like, oh, but I paid so much for these tickets specifically to see LeBron play. So let's say these people paid for their tickets early because that's the game that's predicted that he's going to do it, and he does the night prior.
I have something to point out on this. If you have that money, why are you complaining? If you actually bought the ticket, you have the money. Just buy tickets for the next game. okay? I don't care. If you're complaining about if LeBron gets it or not the night that you want to go see him, too bad. Enjoy it.
I like it. Savage. Savage.
Yeah, I think that there will be people salty about it for sure, but I think the good thing is there's no recourse. Like, it's like you knew what you were signing up for. You knew it was a gamble. It was a really expensive one. Sorry, it doesn't mean a whole lot, but at least, so let's say he does it tonight and you spent like the most money on the Bucks tomorrow. Hey, just tell yourself, I get to watch him the game after he made history. It's like maybe he'll have that fresh out of the plastic smell a little bit, you know, like when you unwrap something and it's brand new, he'll have that new brand new scent because he's all historical.
You
now.
See the new record. You see he adds on to the new record. You're part of, you're actually living through history.
See?
It's actually even better, I would say, if anyways, if you want to justify it. But that's just so crazy. I hope he does do it tonight just for that simple fact that there are people that blew such crazy money expecting to be the Bucks game, and now he's within 36 points, which is very doable for LeBron. And I think it happens tonight as well. I hope it does, just because that'd be hilarious. Just the funniness of people blowing thousands on tickets to people getting them for 147 and seeing the history. Awesome. I love it.
And I was really, really close. My fingers hovered on this for a while when I was looking at the props, because I had a whole LeBron section in DraftKings. And my fingers hovered over the method of how he breaks it for a minute. So they have, if it's a two-point shot at minus 150 odds, so not getting exactly your money back, so the juice not really there on that one. But then a three-pointer to break it plus 260, and then a free throw plus 350. I hovered over the three-pointer option briefly, but I ended up taking none, but because I think the two-pointer is gonna be it. But I could see a little beyond the arc action, like he's like specifically waits for his shot.
I could see that too, just because LeBron, like how you said, he's got that ego. So I can see him being like, what's the hardest way I can get the record? Oh, a deep three? Let's knock it down. Let's save that one for it. And he'll probably wait till the third quarter, fourth quarter or something. Be like, all right, now's the time. Let's unload this. But I could see it being a three-pointer. That's what I'd put my money on. Just got to think of he would try something ridiculous. But I see now that they're also talking about who gets the assist for it. Do you have a favorite personally off of that list of who you think it's that LeBron James assist?
I honestly don't. I was gonna look and see which of these guys has actually assisted the most, like what the numbers were. I neglected to do that, but I just went totally on feelings, and maybe it's the caterpillar above the eyes, but I'm really feeling Anthony Davis. If anybody assists him, I think Anthony Davis is gonna be the guy.
I think there's no assists coming for it. I think he's just. I think,
you think he's gonna be selfish and just do it all on his own.
I think when the moment's there, when it's in grasp, no one else is touching the ball. I think
it would be sick if it was a coast to coast just slam. Like he just wide open. There's no take foul. Nobody can just smack him and be like, nah, psych. So no take foul. Decentivize is doing that, and he can just take it down there and just give us a Bron jam.
I think that would be the way. A classic LeBron slam, coast to coast, just. There's that 19-year-old kid from Akron doing it again. I think that'd be a really cool way to get it. But yeah, I don't predict any assists happening. I think LeBron's he's gonna take it himself. He's gonna be the one to do it. But we're gonna move on to some NFL talk. Aaron Rodgers. You know, he's a guy. He's been in the news, been discussing. Seems like his time in Green Bay is coming to an end. A lot of people are talking about the Raiders and the Jets. Yeah. Raiders and Jets. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers got a lot to think about, a lot going on. So he's decided to go on a darkness retreat. He was on the Pat McAfee show talking about that. And we got a clip from Bleacher Report with his interview with Pat talking about this darkness retreat.
It's four nights of complete darkness.
What? You going to Alaska?
Not Alaska, no. I've been to Alaska. That's a beautiful state. Beautiful.
Are you locked in? Where is it?
You're not locked in. No, you can leave if you you can't do it. You can just walk out the door. But it's a darkness retreat. Wow. And I've had a number of friends who've done it and had some profound experiences. And it's something that's been on my radar for a few years now, and I felt like it'd be awesome to do regardless of where I was leaning after this season. So it's been on the calendar for months and months and months, and it's coming up in a couple weeks.
So you walk. All
right, so first things first, Pat McAfee. What a line.
Are you going to Alaska? That was awesome. Caught me off guard, but it's so funny. But let's see, we're about to take a break, but that's gonna be our discussion now. So I mean, Darkness Retreat. That sounds like something up Aaron Rodgers' alley. I mean, does this surprise you that you're doing something like this before making a decision? Aaron Rodgers is definitely a funky guy, but when we come back here on GoMileHigh.com, we will discuss Aaron Rodgers and the Darkness Retreat. Stay here. I've been Paul, here with Blake and Gordon. We'll be back.
Every day, across this country, hundreds of college radio stations take to the air, broadcasting music and programming that you won't hear anywhere else.
It's one of the last places where people can really be able to actually say what they want to say.
Without it, you wouldn't have a place for local artists to perform. Certain people need to have a chance, a fighting chance, and college radio is that place for it.
College radio changes the lives of those who are involved with it and can change those who listen to it too.
This is where we start out, you know? From getting all this great experience working in college radio, it makes you want to work in real radio.
College radio means finding yourself. It helped me find what I wanted to do in not only school, but in life.
So support college radio by continuing to listen to this station and supporting the students who make it happen. College radio, now, more than ever. A message brought to you by this station and the College Radio Foundation. For more information, please visit collegeradio.org.
While cutting molding with a 12-inch dual-compound miter saw, while holding a newborn baby in your arms, when face-to-face with a congregation of alligators, with the ball in your hands and the entire freaking season on the line, while juggling chainsaws, there are a million places you would never consider texting. So why would you do it while driving? Please stop the texts, and together, we can stop the wrecks. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway and Traffic Safety Administration. Get the message at stoptextstoprex.org.
I'm taking a trip over to Tibet, you know, see the sights, climb a hill or two. But I remember, oh man, I got one guy out here who I actually know. So I give an old ringy dingy to the Lama. What? You know, the Dalai Lama, his laminescence, flowing robes, grace, bald, striking really. I says to the Lama, hey, you remember that round I caddied for you down in Shangri-La? Well, apparently some station out in Lakewood taped the whole thing. See, the Lama's a big hitter, nailed two eagles in a row that day. Well, he says, what station could have possibly gotten all the way out to my sacred holy lands, the Shangri? I says it was none other than GoMileHigh.com, Lama. They got the best sports coverage in the state. The Lama actually tips me this time, 2-1. So he pretty much stiffed me again. But I got him hooked on GoMileHigh.com. So I got that going for me, which is nice.
That's great.
GoMileHigh.com.
Trying to make plans for this weekend?
I can't wait to see what he brings me.
Don't know what to do to kill time?
Pretty sure you just answered your own question.
Tune in every Wednesday. From 3 until 4.
What you talking about?
Sports. Must-see events and many more. Only on GoMileHigh.com.
Live from Denver, Colorado, you're listening to The Dish on GoMileHigh.com.
Welcome back to The Dish on GoMileHigh.com. I am Paul here with Blake Gordon on the board and supervisor. We're going to get back into that Aaron Rodgers talk and his darkness retreat before making a big decision. So, Blake, what do you think of this darkness retreat as it's described? You know, 4 days, complete darkness, just himself, little house. Sounds kind of gnarly to me. What do you think of this?
I had to look it up online. I said, let's see what one of the websites for one of these places looks like. I obviously don't know Aaron Rodgers' preferred dark house or whatever it's called, but the one I looked up was called thehermitageretreats.com. Let me read you a little ditty they've got right on their homepage here. The Dark Retreat is an unparalleled experience in intense seclusion, in which the practitioner is deprived of all light and sensory distractions and thus plunges into a deep witnessing awareness of the mind and eventually experiences the perception of the inner light of pure consciousness. So then we skip down a little bit and there's another section and it says darkness is an ancient tradition. In the dark there are no substances, no plant medicine, no tobacco, no drugs, no coffee allowed to reveal the inner light. So that threw me off because I was thinking the man was headed there to alter his perceptions a little bit, but apparently he's thinking that it's purely the dark that's going to do it. Something about just sitting in the dark is going to unlock something mystical, Aaron Rodgers thinks, I suppose. And I don't know, maybe I shouldn't knock the guy because it kind of reminded me a little bit of, I don't remember if it was a movie I saw it in back in the day or what, but when I was little and still afraid that there was like monsters in the closet and ghosts in your room, I saw a show where the kid like locks himself in the closet and is like, if you're there, come get me. And he like is cured. And so a little while after that, I was laying in bed myself a little afraid. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do that. And I went and locked myself in my closet in the dark and was like, bring it on. And I haven't been afraid of ghosts or monsters since. So maybe that's the kind of thing. Maybe that's what he's got going on.
I'm pretty open-minded, but it just sounds so, to me, this sounds pretty scary. I wouldn't do it. I'm not a fan of the dark, just because I'm such an imaginative person. Maybe I need to lock myself in the closet, and but with my luck, the monster would be like, oh, idiot, like, I got him. the dark, not my friend. So I could not imagine, you know, just the whole time you're just living in pure darkness, and like no coffee, no nothing like that. So it seems like you're kind of, it's like you're going on some kind of spiritual journey kind of trip, but not without drugs. It's kind of like a sensory deprivation chamber, but you're not in the water. You're in this house. So I don't know. I'm trying to understand the vibe and the thought process behind it. Maybe he'll come out of it really just like, like perspective or maybe, but it just seems like a pretty out there kind of thing to do. I don't think he needs to do this. I think maybe if he just kind of like relax, maybe talk to someone, you know.
Why do you have to go somewhere? Like, why can't you just be in your house, shut off the lights, close the blinds? Like, is there just somebody with extreme accountability?
Turn off your phone, just...
Yeah. Well, you've got the power, dude. You know where the light switch is.
Know,
in your own house, you know where everything is. You're not going to bump into anything while you're walking around. You're going into some strange place, and you don't know the layout, so it's completely dark. They give you a little rundown or something. They're like, well, here's the floor plan. 2 days in, you forget where a corner table is, and bam, into the shin.
This sounds scarier and scarier. Who are the people that run these houses? Are they legit? Like, are these, like, regular...
That's another great question, and it also kind of makes me upset that it's one of those things where it's like, why am I not profiting off this? Why don't I have a small cabin in the woods that very rich people are coming to sit in the dark, and I just give them food? Because later in the clip, he talks about how they give you food in a slot. So I just get paid to go feed rich people through a slot?
Wait.
What the heck am I doing?
Wait, I think we're missing out something.
What you're describing right now is the hole in jail. That's the hole. They put you in complete blackness and they only open up the slot to give you food.
This has reminded me of today. I was reading about a guy that went to North Korea and he went there purely to get arrested. Like, he said his fear when he got there was that they would not arrest him. So he said he wanted to just see what it was like in a North Korean jail. This is very similar to that guy.
Yeah,
like, you don't need to do it to have that experience.
Like I said, very open-minded. And up until the point where, like, they give you the food through a slot, like, this seems like a futuristic dystopian form of torture. Like, have y'all seen the movie The Menu recently on HBO Max?
I need to watch it, but I kind of know what it is about.
It's a phenomenal movie, a good, like, horror comedy, but basically it talks about, like, how people, like, rich people, how they have to spend so much on the best things, da da da. And this kind of sounds like one of those trendy kind of things where it's I'm going to stay in this dark house, and when I come out of it, I'm going to have such a perspective. And, like, oh, man, how much something like that cost? Oh, just, like, $2 million, like, nothing crazy. But when you come out of it, you feel so... I'm going to be so much smarter than you. Like that's how I feel like he's going to come out. Like, you feel like he's going to be... I mean, Aaron Rodgers is already a guy that's very... He thinks highly of himself. But I feel like when he comes out of this whole darkness house, he's going to be like, yes, I am now the enlightened one. I'm going to the Jets. We are winning the Super Bowl. Like, I feel like he's going to come out just being absolutely just mad.
It would just be totally so Aaron Rodgers to do to go to this dark room for 4 days, come out and say, I've spoken, I'm going to stay with Green Bay, I'm going to end my career there. And everyone's like, you are such a mug.
I've spoken to the darkness, and we have decided I'm staying in Green Bay. It's where I'm meant to be. The dark's on my side. We're winning the championship.
And it's kind of funny that this came out. People are talking about this on a day that from the Denver Post today, a little article came out, headlined, Aaron Rodgers, Tim Ferriss, and more coming to Psychedelics Conference in Denver this summer. Psychedelic Science will be at the Colorado Convention Center June 19th to 23rd. Aaron, I don't think you're going to the Heritage Center that I was reading about where they don't allow you to have anything in your dark room because it sounds to me it's a shoe fits. Sounds so interesting.
He's going to prep before the dark room and he's going to have the ultimate experience. Good for Aaron Rodgers. You know, I hope this, you know, in all honesty, I know we've been making jokes. Whatever he's going through with this decision, whatever kind of like, you know, pressure it's putting upon him, I hope this dark house helps him. I hope it gives him some kind of perspective of what he wants to do. If he wants to stay at Green Bay, if he wants to pursue other teams, if he wants to retire. I hope this gives him the enlightenment he needs. I feel like he can do anything else, but I hope dark house is what works for him.
At the very least, it'll be a nice relaxing time where he can put his, what feels to me to be a need to be the center of attention all the time. I hope that this is a good break from that for him because I feel like when you're in that headspace for too long, it's likely to really kind of alter you for good. And I mean, maybe he's too far gone from that, but I really hope that this is the kind of space where he can take that step back and be like, maybe I don't need to be in everybody's face all the time.
I don't know. I'm thinking of the dark room now. I'm thinking if I was in that dark house, like that first hour, what are you doing? Like, just accompanying to the dark. So you're just sitting there and just like, oh, man, it's dark in here. Is he walking around? Like, and it's dark.
Man, it's really dark in here. Wish I had some lights.
And he just knocks on the door. Hey, I'm over this. Can we stop?
I think I'd bring my own little package of those glow stars that you, they have the adhesive on the back. You put them on the ceiling and like lay in your bed and look at constellations and stuff. I'd be putting glow stars all over the place.
I wonder if they check you. I wonder if it's like a very strict where like they're like, all right, Aaron, you have to wear the uniform. Like we're gonna pat you down. Make sure you don't have any substances that don't go into the dark room. Only darkness in the dark room and food when we decide to feed you. But man, Aaron Rodgers, he's a character. Okay. Like I said, at the end of the day, I hope this works out for him and I hope he gets some kind of perspective of what he wants to do next with his career. But let's see. Keeping up with some NFL talks, Daniel Jones is expected to re-sign with the Giants for between $35 and $37 million per year. If not, otherwise become a free agent in March. Josh Allen is about to be $43 million per year. So we're going to discuss some of the QBs likely hitting free agency, what they're looking for, where they could end up with. And we're going to talk about some of the bigger names on the list. So starting off with number one, Baker Mayfield. The Los Angeles Rams are currently at an $8.1 million contract annually. So, Blake, start with you. Baker Mayfield, do you think he's going to be a hot commodity in free agency? If he is a free agent, do you think he's going to be someone that could really improve a team? Do you think he's still kind of on that backup quarterback kind of scenario? Where do you see Baker Mayfield right now?
I think hot commodity is quite a strong thing to title him as. I think Baker is going to find himself probably on the bench somewhere. I saw somebody speculating that he could potentially be a replacement for Tom Brady in Tampa Bay, but there's such a big list of quarterbacks. I mean, there's so many other names, like if Daniel Jones were to go to free agency, Geno Smith potentially in the free agency, Lamar even. So I just think there's names slightly ahead of Baker to make him a super hot commodity. So my call is probably a bench guy at the end of it all.
Bench guy. Okay. So moving down the list, we got a guy that's getting up there in age, but you know, he's had the accolades. He's been on championship teams. Jimmy G going into free agency. Seems like more than likely with their whole situation, he's probably done with San Francisco. But what do you think? Do you think maybe San Francisco tries to re-sign him due to all the quarterback injuries they got going on, and maybe they want to stick to, you know, who they know knows the plays and someone that's consistent? Or do you think Jimmy G goes elsewhere? Or do you think, you know, maybe he takes a season to kind of relax? Maybe he doesn't play this season. What do you think of Jimmy G?
I think that Jimmy G...
In the right place, because at GoMileHigh.com we have tons of shows discussing sports, news, politics, entertainment, community affairs, and much, much more.
Awesome! Totally awesome!
And don't forget, if you miss out on one of your favorite shows, you can always access our archived episodes at GoMileHigh.com on your own time.
If I'm here and you're here, doesn't that make it our time?
Pretty young Papsy, we must make it back to Camelot so I can listen to GoMileHigh.com.
Oh, who goes there?
It is I, King Arthur, on his mighty steed. Let me in the castle at once. I must get to my quarters to listen in to the best in Colorado's sports lifestyle programming.
But, sir, don't we live in medieval Wales?
No, Papsy, you mustn't ask questions when I'm listening about my beloved Broncos. Ah, GoMileHigh.com.
Hey Colorado sports fans, you're listening to GoMileHigh.com, a student-operated station live from the Colorado Media School Studios here in Belmar, giving you a different perspective on all things current.
Stop torturing yourself, man! Live in the now!
So stay tuned to see what's coming up next on GoMileHigh.com, Colorado's sports lifestyle.
Showing.
Trying to make plans for this weekend?
I can't wait to see what he brings me.
Don't know what to do to kill time?
Pretty sure you just answered your own question.
Tune in every Wednesday.
Well, we're waiting.
From 3 until 4.
What you talking about?
Sports. Must-see events and many more. Only on GoMileHigh.com.
If it's great radio you're looking for, then you're in the right place. Because at GoMileHigh.com, we have tons of shows discussing sports, news, politics, entertainment, community affairs, and much, much more.
Awesome! Totally awesome!
And don't forget, if you miss out on one of your favorite shows, you can always access our archived episodes at GoMileHigh.com on your own time.
If I'm here and you're here, doesn't that make it our time?
You're listening to The Dish with Blake, Paul, and Gordon.
Oh, we ain't gonna talk about this.
Take me out! It's my turn! It is. You told me it was my turn!
You can talk all that you want to, yell and scream, but you're lost.
It is my turn!
You lost the game!
It's my turn.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to The Dish on GoMileHigh.com. I am Paul here with Blake, Gordon on the board, Dan Watson. Back to the QB talk. So we're just discussing the upcoming QB free agents in the NFL and where they could possibly be heading, some of the bigger names. So moving on, we have Daniel Jones of the New York Giants, 25 years old, young up-and-comer quarterback. If he does not re-sign with the Giants, could definitely be someone that's hot on a lot of teams' radars. What do you think of Daniel Jones? Where do you think he ends up ultimately if he does not re-sign with the Giants?
I foresee the Giants figuring out the money on this one. If I was the Giants, I wouldn't want to let Daniel Jones walk. I mean, he's had questionable seasons before. This season he did pretty well. And sure, $35 to $37 million per year is kind of expensive. But, I mean, for a guy that's not in the bottom half of your quarterbacks in the league, that's what they're going to be asking for this year. I mean, you've got Josh Allen at $43 million per. And that's kind of, in my opinion, the standard for – a really good quarterback right now. So I see the Giants figuring out how to free up their money, maybe take it in the shorts on a couple other positions, but they got to figure out the money for Daniel Jones to keep him in New York.
I agree. I think that would be the best move for the Giants. I mean, they got to the playoffs this year. I mean, and that's just going to be, like you said, that's the money that QBs are going for right now. So I think it would be in the best interest for the Giants to keep Daniel Jones, because, I mean, if they don't, I feel like there'll be a lot of teams that would be willing to lock him up. So I think the Giants do need to figure out the money situation. And like I said, it's going to cost them on a couple other positions, but I think at the end of the day, locking up Jones would be the best move for the Giants.
And then, interestingly enough, today it came out that Derek Carr has received permission from the Raiders to go and visit the New Orleans Saints, so that'll be happening soon. Derek Carr with a no-trade clause in his contract, but Raiders pretty much booting him out, telling him, go visit somebody else.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy that they've already given him the permission to go talk to other teams. I think that would be a great fit for him, though, New Orleans. I mean, I was talking about it before the show where he was at the skills event, and it seemed like he was playing with a chip on his shoulder. It seemed like he was trying to show out to other teams that, like, hey, you know, even though, you know, things in Vegas, they really ended poorly, out of my control, I'm still a top quarterback. I can still, you know, do phenomenal things. He's got such a phenomenal arm. Like, dude is very talented. And I think the Saints would be a good spot for him if he ultimately ends up there. But I think either way, just that he's getting out of Vegas, I think it got kind of toxic towards the end there. I think he's going to have a phenomenal comeback season wherever he ends up.
I could easily see him being like a Geno Smith of this year into next year. We're talking about Derek Carr as a comeback player of the year. I could see that for sure.
Oh, 100%. And then we got to talk Geno, who had just an absolute crazy season. Just one of the best season of his career. Still only 32 years old. You know, helped lead the Seattle Seahawks to the playoffs. No one expected that at all. So, I mean, if he does not re-sign with the Seahawks, that's kind of a big name that you can get at a cheaper price, who's shown that, hey, he's maybe hitting – maybe this is his prime. You know, we thought maybe, you know, younger, coming out of college, he was going to be a stud right off the bat. But maybe he's just got one of those guys that took some time, and maybe from 32 to 36, we're going to see the best years from Geno Smith, you know, and he could be a top-notch quarterback for any team.
I could see – I guess it takes me a little more looking into this, but Seattle Seahawks, I honestly am unsure of why they wouldn't be looking to keep Geno Smith, especially right now he's barely making over $3 million annual. And so, I mean, geez, the most that you could really see him ask for is, like, he's not going to ask for over $20 million per – at all. So, I mean, the Seahawks, I think, would be remiss to let him walk.
Yeah, I don't see him leaving. I feel like the Seahawks have to lock him up, especially at that price range. Like you said, there's no way he could really ask more than $10 million. And for that kind of production, I mean, let's see what he did last year. You know, 30 touchdowns on 11 interceptions. That's a bargain at that price range. So I feel like he's going to end up staying in Seattle. But, I mean, he had such a boost for his career. If they decide to let him walk, I think he could – you know, end up in a great position for any team.
And so let's see, teams that we're left with. So Carr obviously leaving, Raiders we're left with, Buccaneers empty at the helm of quarterback, Panthers, Texans we talked about possibly. They've got all those draft options that they got from the Deshaun Watson trade. They're looking at a first and third round pick in 2023, this year's draft. And then the Colts obviously looking for a quarterback, the Jets, Commanders, Falcons, and depending on the darkness retreat, potentially the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, there's a lot of teams out here looking for quarterbacks, and there's a lot of possible options. It's going to be exciting to see next year. I think there's going to be a lot of different faces, different jerseys, and it's going to be fun to see. I like when I'm going to use Carr for an example. I like when a guy's been with a team for so long, you expected so much of him, he's had glimpses of greatness, and then the team just gives up on him, just kind of like, hey, he was never that great, we're going to move on from him. I would love to see him in another jersey, just really show the Raiders that you really messed up by getting rid of me and that I'm still a top-notch quarterback. I think next season will be excited, depending on where all these quarterbacks end up.
Do you see old Drew Lock landing anywhere? He's on this list of free agents with his 1.7 per contract going on. So, and only 26. I mean, it's not like it's time to kick him out of the league, but does he have a spot on a bench somewhere, or is he going to be one of those guys that just kind of disappears?
You know what?
we got a spot for him in Arizona. I wouldn't mind having him on the bench. In all honesty, he's not a bad quarterback. Someone that I think just kind of – he was put into a starting moment too soon, but I think he's still got time to develop. You know, like you said, he's only 26, could still definitely get there. So, I mean, joking with the Arizona, but I don't think he'd be bad. I don't think he'd be a bad backup for any team. I think he's solid, especially for the price range.
Another guy that I think is going to be solid for the price range that I hope doesn't get overlooked and I think deserves a little bit more than he's going to get, and I made quite a bit of money off him, so maybe that's what's talking this year, but Jacoby Brissett, man, I am kind of salty about how he's talked about because the man put up, I mean, granted he didn't play the last three games of the season and he only played part of the season from September 11th until the end of November, basically, but the man put up 2,608 yards on 64% completion. It's not bad at all, but everybody kept talking about how they couldn't wait to get him out of there and couldn't wait to see Deshaun Watson. I get it, but Jacoby, put some respect on that man's name. Let's get him somewhere that he can actually do something. Let's put him, I don't know, let's toss him somewhere like, I'd like to see him start for the Falcons. That would be pretty sick, Jacoby Brissett, the Falcons starting quarterback, but I have a strong feeling that Brissett, wherever he lands, is going to be back on the bench, and kind of makes me sad.
I think so as well. As much as I would like to see Brissett, because like you said, for someone that was just a placeholder up until Deshaun Watson, and that's how everyone looked at him, to throw for, you know, 2,600 yards, 12 TDs to 6 interceptions, phenomenal ratio. I'll take that for someone that you just considered a placeholder QB. But I agree with you. I think he's been very disrespected, and I think ultimately he's going to end up being a backup. I don't think he's going to end up being a starter. But I would love to see him in a starting position. I think the Falcons would be cool, but I think that would be the only team that would possibly give him that kind of opportunity. I think everywhere else he'd be looked up as a backup, or they have other options that they're looking for. But we're going to move on to some fight talk. We had a big retirement this past weekend. The Last Emperor, Fedor Emelianenko, officially retired from MMA. He fought Ryan Bader for the Bellator Heavyweight Championship. He was absolutely destroyed. Was not close. But he asked for that matchup. A lot of people were upset. They were like, why would you give... and we discussed it before. When a legend's doing their final fight, why would you give them... someone, you know, such a higher level, younger, higher caliber at this point in the career. But Fedor asked for it. He wanted a final challenge. He wanted one more opportunity to win the belt. And, you know, you can't deny a legend like that. He finishes with a career record, 40 wins, 7 losses. But, I mean, his legend started when he just went undefeated for years. After his first loss back in King of Kings, he lost by TKO doctor stoppage, so not even a true loss. It was just he had a cut in a bad placement. Doctor had to stop it. From that point on, so from April 2001 up until
8 years later,
November 7, 2009, that man was absolutely wrecking people. From Japan, Russia, you name the organization, he was beating everyone, and he became just such a legend. Like I said, what's a Paul Bunyan? What's that term? It's a It's
I know what you're looking for now. Like, it's done the same to me.
Yeah,
it's
like, I don't know. It's
like urban. Like an
urban legend where you're just like, you just hear about this guy. You're like, man, have you guys heard of Fedor? This Russian guy, doesn't talk, fat dude, doesn't look like he'd fight, but he absolutely wrecks everybody. And everyone's just like, man, what are you talking about? And people were just tuning in like, oh my gosh, like, who is this man? Like, he's so stoic. He wears goofy sweaters. Like, he just does not look imposing at all. And he was just absolutely running through the heavyweight division, easily one of the most difficult divisions in all of mixed martial arts. There's no room for error in the heavyweight division. Everyone there has power. So it's just for him to go undefeated for that many years in heavyweight. And then when he did lose, he lost to the best of the best guys. Fabricio Verdum, one of the best heavyweights of all time. Antonio Silva, Bigfoot, he was solid. Not a goat of all time, but in his prime, one of the best. Dan Henderson, legend, Hall of Famer. Moving up. Matt Mitrione, eh. But that was like 2017. He's at his old stage. So the guys that he's losing to, no one's been a scrub. He's always lost to the best of the best competition, even at this point in his career, 46 years old. He's fighting the best guys.
What about I was reading about Dana White kind of poo-pooing on the guy on his retirement night, and he said, he's retiring tonight and all that stuff, but you guys know the deal. I never thought that Fedor was that in regards to the best in his class. He says, I mean, he got knocked out by middleweight Dan Henderson.
So Dana White is absolutely, I can't say the word, but that's him. He tried to sign Fedor for years. He wanted to sign him to fight Brock Lesnar, and he's just the kind of guy that if he, because he couldn't sign him, he's going to trash all over him. But he wanted Fedor for years, and it just couldn't come to a deal because he wanted too much money. Dana's not the kind of guy to pay people like that. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll get more into my Dana rant and why he does this to fighters. We'll be back with the dish on GoMileHigh.com.
Taking a trip over to Tibet, you know, see the sights, climb a hill or two. But I remember, oh man, I got one guy out here who I actually know. So I give an old ringy dingy to the Lama, you know, the Dalai Lama, his laminescence, flowing robes, grace, bald, striking really. I says to the Lama, hey, you remember that round I caddied for you down in Shangri-La? Well, apparently some station out in Lakewood taped the whole thing. See, the Lama's a big hitter. Nailed two eagles in a row that day. Well, he says, what station could have possibly gotten all the way out to my sacred holy lands, the Shangri? I says it was none other than GoMileHigh.com, Lama. They got the best sports coverage in the state. The Lama actually tips me this time, 2-1. So he pretty much stiffed me again. But I got him hooked on GoMileHigh.com. So I got that going for me, which is nice.
That's great.
GoMileHigh.com.
If it's great radio you're looking for, then you're in the right place. Because at GoMileHigh.com, we have tons of shows discussing sports, news, politics, entertainment, community affairs, and much, much more. And don't forget, if you miss out on one of your favorite shows, you can always access our archived episodes at GoMileHigh.com on your own time.
If I'm here and you're here, doesn't that make it our time?
Every day, across this country, hundreds of college radio stations take to the air, broadcasting music and programming that you won't hear anywhere else.
It's one of the last places where people can really be able to actually say what they want to say.
Without it, you wouldn't have a place for local artists to perform. Certain people need to have a chance, a fighting chance, and college radio is that place for it.
College radio changes the lives of those who are involved with it and can change those who listen to it too.
This is where we start out, you know? From getting all this great experience working in college radio, it makes you want to work in real radio.
College radio means finding yourself. It helped me find what I wanted to do in not only school, but in life.
So support college radio by continuing to listen to this station and supporting the students who make it happen. College radio, now, more than ever. A message brought to you by this station and the College Radio Foundation. For more information, please visit collegeradio.org.
Colorado Media School, hands-on learning in one of the most exciting career fields out there. Internship opportunities are limitless. We have 3 on-campus radio stations, 2 TV stations, and you'll have the opportunity to participate in projects like doing play-by-play live from a sporting event or the 48-hour film project. We have after-graduation career placement assistance and financial aid for those who qualify. Check us out online at coloradomediaschool.com, on Facebook and Instagram, and CO Media School on Twitter and Snapchat. You can also call 303-937-7070.
You're listening to The Dish on GoMileHigh.com.
Oh, and don't you guys go anywhere. Plan to put on a hitting display.
Welcome back to The Dish on GoMileHigh.com. I am Paul here with Blake, Jordan on the board, Dan watching out for us. Back to our fight talk discussion, The Last Emperor, as the entire past weekend. I just want to talk about my first memory of Fedor. So the first fight I ever saw from Fedor was in Pride Fighting Championship back in 2004. It's as I was getting into the sport, still very young, just learning everything. And
I was a fan of Kevin Randleman. He was one of the few fighters I knew, a wrestler. He came out of the UFC, transitioned between Pride and the UFC, fighting in both organizations. Phenomenal dude, former UFC champion. So I was just like, since I knew him, didn't really know Fedor, I was like, oh, Kevin Randleman, he's definitely going to take him. And there was a point in the fight where Kevin Randleman suplexed Fedor Emelianenko. It's one of the craziest highlights of all time. Suplexed him onto his neck. The fact that the man isn't dead is absolutely insane. But Fedor got up from it and ended up winning the matchup. It's absolutely insane. I highly recommend watching that clip because it's just so gnarly to see, like, how did he survive that and then come back to win by Kimura? But that was my first taste of Fedor, and since then I've just been in awe of the guy. He's really just such an unassuming character. You wouldn't think he's such a crazy, explosive athlete, but man, in his prime, there was no one doing it like him. He had the speed of a middleweight guy, but still that power of a heavyweight, and he was just so skilled. A lot of the Russian fighters, they come up in like sambo and stuff like that, and they have great grappling and stand-up techniques. It's just that lifestyle out there. So he just grew up in the fight game, and man, just I was sad seeing him leave, and especially the way Bellator did it. In all respect to Bellator and their owner, their president, Scott Coker, he had all the legends there. He had Chuck Liddell, he had Royce Gracie, oh my gosh, Matt Hughes was there, like all the legends. Like after Fedor lost, they had him take a picture together and hang out, and it was just a good way to see that's how legends should be treated and respected. And I wish the UFC would follow Bellator's lead a bit more in regards to that sense, because I like the way they did that, but you never see stuff like that in the UFC. You just see guys like Shogun, like I said, who recently, another legend coming from Pride, who was fed to a prospect in his home country of Brazil and was massacred. I wish the legends were treated a bit better, but unfortunately that's how it is sometimes.
So Fedor, your all-time best MMA heavyweight?
So we talked about it a little bit but before we started the show. So going off of record, it's hard to argue. The man's 40 wins, 7 losses, 16 KOs, 15 submissions. Like, the man's just an absolute monster. But personally, if injuries hadn't hampered him and also lifestyle things, I feel like Cain Velasquez was ultimately the best heavyweight I'd ever seen. The man was just an absolute freak. We never saw anyone at that kind of weight move the way he did and have the cardio that he did. He was just an absolute destroyer. And if injuries hadn't affected his career, and then also the situation with going after his daughter's molester and landing in jail for attempted murder, you know, that absolutely ended his career. I think I would call him the best heavyweight of all time. But as of right now, I don't think there's any way to argue that Fedor Emelianenko is the best. He just has the resume. He's beaten so many legends. I mean, the guy's got wins over Crow Cop, Tim Sylvia, Andre Arlovsky. Like, you name it, he's beat the best. Quentin Rampage Jackson. Like, just a who's who of some of the best guys we've ever seen. So I think just going off of ultimately the record and strength of schedule, I would say Fedor Emelianenko will go down as the greatest heavyweight MMA fighter of all time.
How do you think Stipe Miocic will measure up to him?
It's tough to say because Stipe stayed in the UFC his entire career, and I know people that UFC is the standard, especially today. We don't have the organizations like Pride in them out there. I still hold Stipe in high regard. He's one of the greatest heavyweights of all time. I have him top five, but it's just hard to say because back then you were able to travel around to Japan and there was different styles of fight. Like I said, in Pride, it wasn't the traditional 3 5-minute rounds. It was 2 10-minute rounds, and their judging criteria was also different. They honestly, whatever happened in the first round happened in the first round, but they were more focused on what happened at towards the back end of the fight. So I think just because Fedor had so much experience in different styles of fighting, different organizations, and just fighting such high caliber of competition, I still have Fedor as the greatest heavyweight of all time. But Stipe is there. You really can't deny Stipe and the work he's done. I have him as top five up there. I would say Fedor number one. I would put, and I'm not a DC fan, but I would put Daniel Cormier at number two. It's really hard to deny everything he's done at heavyweight. Number three, I have Cain Velasquez. Number four, I have Stipe Miocic. And then number five, I'm going to put Randy Couture. I would say he would round up my top five heavyweights.
Nice.
Continue with the fight talk. We got to bring up UFC 284 this weekend. We got to talk about it because Dana White is not promoting it at all. That's been some of the negative publicity he's been receiving as of late. He's been more focused on his slap fight league, and he's been ignoring this absolutely insane pay-per-view card we have coming this weekend in Australia. So we're going to discuss the whole card itself is a banger, but I just want to really discuss the two main fights, the main event and the co-main event, because they're absolutely huge. So the co-main event is a featherweight matchup for the featherweight title, Yair Rodriguez versus Josh Emmett. So Alexander Volkanovski is the featherweight champion, but this is for an interim title because Volkanovski is going up to face Makhachev for the 55 title. So if Volkanovski wins the belt, he will relinquish the 45 title, and that belt becomes undisputed. But if he loses the fight, the belt would remain interim, and then Volkanovski would face the winner of Rodriguez and Emmett to just determine who's the undisputed champion. So big stuff going on right there. Yair and Josh Emmett, that's a tough fight for me to pick because Josh Emmett, I was in the Army with his brother James. I'd met Josh a couple of times. Very cool guy. Trains with Uriah Faber. He's over in California. He's part of the Team Alpha Male. He's a wrestler, number one primarily, but over time he's developed such crazy power and he's been known as a knockout guy, and that's what got him really famous and known in the UFC. He has an 18-2 record, and the only thing that's really held him back in his career is he's very injury prone. Crazy injuries too. We've seen in fights he's broken his knuckle multiple times, even in fights he wins, so it's like he has such a long recovery period. It's hard for him to truly build momentum because he's always having to recover. But the guy's healthy now. He's looking in the best shape of his life, and he's going to need to be because he's taking on Yair Rodriguez. Yair Rodriguez is just one of the nastiest, doesn't even matter the weight class, but one of the nastiest kickers of all time. I've never seen someone have a repertoire like him. He can throw kicks from so many angles. He has so many different styles of kicks, spinning kicks, flying techniques. I mean, his flying kick knockout of Andre Feely is still one of the craziest things I've ever seen in my life. And I'm still mad at him for the way he knocked out Cheng Sung Jung, the Korean Zombie, one of my favorite fighters of all time. Korean Zombie was winning the fight. He did not need to engage him this last 10 seconds of the fifth round, but that's not the Zombie style. He's going to fight to the bell. And he pulled off the craziest thing I've ever seen. So he got the Zombie to duck as if he was going to throw something over the top. And then he threw an elbow from this position, so going from down to up, and landed perfectly, knocking him out with 1 second left. The guy is just so dangerous from so many angles, so many levels. I'm scared for Josh.
It's like I'm El Pantera, Panther. El Pantera. You never know where he's going to jump out at you
and
from.
He just does such crazy kicks. He'll even throw behind the leg kicks. Like, he's very funky. It's just so – it's a pleasure to watch him, and I wish Emmett was facing anybody else. It hurts me to say this, but I got to go with Yair Rodriguez. I think he gets the finish. I'm taking Yair TKO second round. I think he becomes the interim featherweight champion. What is your prediction on that matchup?
I'm following you, sir.
On that one? I said, man, I was hoping you were going for Emmett. Someone's got to go for my boy. It's going to be a good matchup, but I just think overall Yair has just more weapons, and just the fact that he's a very kick-heavy guy and Emmett is small for the weight class. Yair is going to be able to keep him at bay with his kicks. He's not going to be able to get inside and land those power shots. So I think Yair Rodriguez gets that second round finish. But the main event, this is a huge one. Huge, huge, huge matchup. I'm so excited for this one. Islam Makhachev makes his first title defense of his lightweight title versus Alexander Volkanovski, the many say the featherweight goat. He's still the current champion, but he's going up to face Islam. And like how I had explained, depending on how the main event goes, if he wins the belt, he will become the new 155 champion and he will stay there. If he loses, he'll remain the 145 champion and still stick at featherweight. So big implications here. Just a crazy matchup. I mean, Islam Makhachev has been an absolute destroyer. He is Habib's protege. You know, he's a lot of people say the second coming of Habib. Pretty much the same style of fighter, but with better striking. And, I mean, he proved that when he won the belt, when he took on Charles Oliveira. Because a lot of people were just like, oh, Charles, he's definitely got the better hands, and he's going to be able to take care of Makhachev on the feet. But no, from the time the bell rang, it was all Makhachev. On the feet, on the ground, there was nothing Oliveira could do. I was very impressed with his performance.
I mean, the guy is just an absolute monster. I mean, he hasn't lost since 2015, a freak TKO to a guy that's you don't even hear about anymore. But since then, I mean, he goes on to KO Gleison Tibau, submission over Cajon Johnson. He got a finish over Drew Dober, finish over Thiago Moises, finish over Dan Hooker, Bobby Green, and then finishing the champion Charles Oliveira. It's insane. Like, we haven't seen a talent like this, like I said, since Khabib. But even then, Khabib was just a grappler. He just had that one thing for him. Makhachev can destroy you anywhere. Feet, ground, doesn't matter. The man is a bruiser. Volkanovski, he's a guy that does everything well. But I wouldn't say he's a jack of all trades, but a master of none. This is just going to be a tough matchup. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll do that breakdown of the main event. We'll talk about who's going to walk away as the lightweight champion. Stay tuned for some more sports talk here on the Dish on GoMileHigh.com. Great radio you're looking for, then you're in the right place, because at GoMileHigh.com we have tons of shows discussing sports, news, politics, entertainment, community affairs, and much, much more. And don't forget, if you miss out on one of your favorite shows, you can always access our archived episodes at GoMileHigh.com on your own time.
If I'm here and you're here, doesn't that make it our time?
Hurry, young Papsy, we must make it back to Camelot so I can listen to GoMileHigh.com.
Oh, who goes there?
It is I, King Arthur, on his mighty steed. Let me in the castle at once. I must get to my quarters to listen in to the best in Colorado's sports lifestyle programming.
But, sir, don't we live in medieval Wales?
No, Papsy, you mustn't ask questions when I'm listening about my beloved Broncos. Ah, GoMileHigh.com.
Hey, Colorado sports fans, you're listening to GoMileHigh.com, a student-operated station live from the Colorado Media School Studios here in Belmar, giving you a different perspective on all things current.
Stop torturing yourself, man! Live in the now!
So stay tuned to see what's coming up next on GoMileHigh.com, Colorado's sports lifestyle.
Showing.
Trying to make plans for this weekend?
I can't wait to see what he brings me.
Don't know what to do to kill time?
Pretty sure you just answered your own question.
Tune in every Wednesday.
Well, we're waiting.
From 3 until 4.
What you talking about?
Sports. Must-see events and many more. Only on GoMileHigh.com.
Go Mile High, your college radio for sports, movies, and games. Run by students, for students, and more.
Let's see what they can do here for the final.
Sports news, live games, and discussions about just about everything.
Disney turning their rides in their parks into movies.
So close, so many times, and to have that snatched.
Come and join us every day for your favorite shows, only at GoMileHigh.com.
Hurry, young Papsy, we must make it back to Camelot so I can listen to GoMileHigh.com.
Oh, who goes there?
It is I, King Arthur, on his mighty steed. Let me in the castle at once. I must get to my quarters to listen in to the best in Colorado's sports lifestyle programming.
But, sir, don't we live in medieval Wales?
No, Papsy, you mustn't ask questions when I'm listening about my beloved Broncos. Ah. GoMileHigh.com.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more sports talk here on The Dish on GoMileHigh.com.
You got to talk to me. You have no choice. You got nowhere to go. Keep talking.
Welcome back to The Dish on GoMileHigh.com. I'm Paul here with Blake, going on the phone with Dan, watching out for us. And we got some breaking news we have to discuss. The Denver Nuggets and Minnesota Timberwolves game.
The Nuggets currently lead 51-24 here in the second quarter. So, T-Wolves fans, if you thought you were a competition for us, you're not. And like Blake had predicted, MPJ going off from behind the stripes, got 19 points, 3-3 from beyond the arc. Like you said, we're someone needed to take advantage of the lack of three-point defense of the Timberwolves off and up, and MPJ is like, I got it. So it's good to see him stepping up for the injured Jamal Murray and taking the place as that sharp shooter for the Nuggets. But still, right now, 51-24 with 10-18 left in quarter number two.
I mean, went on a 32-2 point streak there for a bit.
Holy cow. Definitely got to mention that. That's like something that happens in 2K. So T-Wolves fans, if you ever want to think that you can keep up with us, remember, 32-2 run. 32-2 run.
You scored one time. They scored more than 15 times.
If this was 21, y'all were skunked. But we're going to get back into finish up our little fight breakdown of UFC 284, finish up that talk of the main event. So before we left, I was hyping up Islam Makhachev, but we got to give Alexander Volkanovsky his due. So the man is coming up from featherweight. He's the 145-pound champion. And the last time he's lost, 2013, before he was even in the UFC, he was just a young up-and-coming fighter, lost to a guy, Corey Nelson. Who even is that? We don't know. But we do know Alexander Volkanovsky hasn't lost since then, and he's rattled off some big wins. I mean, his last title defense, Max Holloway. I mean, what a performance. There are two fights prior to that were very close. The second fight, I thought Holloway won. This third fight, there was no doubt about it. Volkanovski came out and it was like, you know what? I don't want there to be any doubt on this fight anymore. I don't want anyone to think that me and Max are on par. I'm going to show that I'm the best. And he beat Max at his own game.
Sounds a lot like Nuggets, Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yes,
sorry.
I love it. Had to throw that in. I love it. Keep it up. That grit. That dog. That dog. Yeah. But, yeah, he beat him at his own game. He kept the fight standing and just absolutely massive. It was tough to watch because I'm a big Max fan, and to see someone get beat that bad, I was like, wow. But it just really stamped that Volkanovski is just the greatest featherweight of all time. I mean, before that, TKO of Chael Sung Jung. Before that, defeat Brian Ortega. Max Holloway, Jose Aldo, Chad Mendes, Darren Elkins. Like, it's just a who's who of some of the best fighters we've seen at the 145-pound division, and Volkanovski has just done away with them. And him coming up to 155 is such a challenge, and I really respect him for it, because he's, even at 45, a lot of people find him to be kind of a smaller guy. He's, you know, I mean, he's 5'6", he's short, and in comparison to Makhachev, who's, you know, 55, just a weight class above him, he looks huge in comparison to Volkanovski. So this is going to be it's a tough matchup for Volk, and I really want to see him win. I think that would be awesome. I think that would solidify him as maybe even the greatest fighter of all time. You got to put him in GOAT situation, you know, be a double champion like that. But he really has his work cut out for him. He's 34 years old, starting to get up there long in the tooth, but heart says Volkanovski, Hez says Makhachev. I just feel like the guy is so hot. He's coming into his prime. I mean, he was waiting for Khabib to retire before he even wanted to make his move on the title out of respect to him. You know, they see each other as a brother. His father helped raise him and train him. So I think it's Makhachev's time, and I think we're just going to continue to see the best from Islam. I see this. I want to say this one goes to decision, but I think Makhachev gets the finish.
It's looking to me, from what I'm looking at here, I feel like Volk is really going to be relying on it going late, because if this fight ends prior to three rounds, it's going the way of Makhachev. But if this fight goes the distance, I think is where Volk has the chance, because his last few fights have gone four or five, but Islam's coming out and getting it done prior to usually before three rounds. So I think that's the big tale. If it can go the distance, we might be seeing Volk's name as the victor, but if it's a quick fight, it's probably Islam.
Yeah, and it's tough to predict with Islam, because we don't know exactly how he's going to come out for Volkanovski. I mean, like I said, he can stand. He's a phenomenal stand-up guy, but that's where Volkanovski would give him the most problems. I think if he decides to take this one down, I think he can end it early. But if he's a little too confident and think, hey, I can stand with Volkanovski, I can see Volkanovski landing some big shots, but it's just, Makhachev is such a dominant wrestler.
Volkanovski is a great grappler in his own right, but I just don't see him being able to take down Makhachev, where in return, I can see Makhachev being able to take down Volkanovski, and I think that's where the advantage really lies. But if he's able to stifle the takedowns early and force him to stand, I'm with you. I think if he can keep this to go late, we've never really seen Makhachev go. We've never seen him go five rounds. We've never seen him truly go late. Volkanovski is the kind of guy that can strategize, and maybe he does something. Maybe the low kicks, stay away from the takedowns, keep circling the cage, score points up until round three, four, five, and like you said, turn it on. Be like, hey, this guy hasn't been here. Let's bring him into deep waters and let's drown him. I would love to see Volkanovski win.
I think it would be messed up if a guy with no nickname beat a guy nicknamed The Great. Come on. Can't be having that happen.
Oh, man.
Give him a nickname before he goes in there against The Great. The also great or something.
Also great. Greater. I mean, when you don't need a nickname, that's when you it's kind of scary, though. You're like, oh, you're fighting Makhachev? Oh, no. I'm so sorry. But it's going to be a crazy one. Like I said, my prediction, I think Makhachev gets it done in the fourth round, but I would love nothing more than to see Volkanovski make history, come up to lightweight, and become a champ. If there's anyone that deserves it and has put in the due as a mixed martial artist, it's him. I mean, coming out of, he was a rugby player in Australia, 5'6", 220 pounds, decides to transition to MMA, now the 145-pound champion, looking to become the 155-pound champion. It's just an absolutely incredible story, and I would love nothing more to see Volkanovski win. But I just don't see it happening versus Makhachev. And we're going to move on from fight talk. We got to get back to the Broncos, and we got to discuss some Sean Payton. I mean, that huge press conference, huge news, him coming over as the head coach. I mean, what are your final impressions upon Sean Payton being signed as the head coach of the Denver Broncos?
Now that I've slept on it a little bit, talked about it a little bit, I still hold with excitement to see the culture that he claims he's going to build. He's promised us a different culture as fans of the Broncos, so I'm really excited to see that culture he builds. My only concern I've been left with, I keep going back to Peyton talking about how he had the Saints buy a $30,000 stereo system to drag around with him to locker rooms and so that other teams could hear them celebrate. And I get that Peyton is going to be, he said himself, he's going to be really into the maniacal details and the small stuff matters, but we don't got to be divas. I mean, that's a little extra. It's going to be finding that happy medium in between. Yes, we're maniacal in the details and the small things matter. I want to keep my team like in good spirits and we want to celebrate our successes. But I think that there's also an upper level to that where that you can go above and do too much. And I think that if you're too concerned with what song you're going to bump on the playlist after the game, then it's a little bit of a distraction. So I think overall, now that I've ruminated a little bit, much more excited than I was before the introductory press conference for Sean Payton, but metered expectations still.
I'm with you on that. I still feel like they could have got a better option, you know, for less. You know, the fact that we had to give up two draft picks to sign Sean Payton, I still feel like is so much, but
especially for a team that keeps talking, well, a lot of people talking now about how sure we've got the coach, but now what? I mean, we don't have any, well, we have a few, a small few players that are some people you can build a team around, but we don't have necessarily a quarterback that's proven to us that we can build around him right now. So yes, we have the coach, but there's so many other pieces, and then you're giving away the draft moves that you had to get those pieces. So yeah, I don't think we're in win now. I think that immediately putting us into a deep playoff run is a little too much to expect. I'll be happy with a winning season, personally.
Okay. Yeah, because that's what I was going to ask for. Because like, I feel like I think a Super Bowl team, out of the question, we're nowhere near that. Deep playoff run, nowhere near that. Maybe sneak into the playoffs, possibly, depending on how the other teams in the division pan out. That's the only thing I could really see. But I would say, what would your expectations be? At least a winning season coming from Sean Payton, his first year here? Has to have a winning season?
Yeah, I'll put us two games over 500.
Two games over 500. I'm with you there, too. I think that's the very least Sean Payton can come in and do is provide a winning season. I was pretty critical before, saying they need at least 10 wins. But honestly, just over 500,
great step in the right direction, especially how much of a train wreck last season was, just in all sense of it, from the head coaching, you know, the play clock management, you know, from the Russell Wilson, and just from just all the drama around the team and everything. I think just to be over 500 this upcoming NFL season is such a great step in the right direction, and hopefully we can land some, you know, draft picks or some younger pieces, because like you said, we have last year the focus was the quarterback. We didn't get the main guy we wanted, but we still got a solid guy, big contract numbers, didn't pan out, still good talent, still can work out for us. This offseason, we focused on the head coach, put all our eggs in one basket, we went for Sean Payton, we got Sean Payton. So that's back-to-back seasons of two big moves where you're just focused on that move, and we haven't done anything for the other pieces. So I'm with you on that. I'm worried about that sense, but at least we got a head coach now, and hopefully he can steer the direction and we'll start building.
Really hope that one is going to get a lead in the game. We haven't seen that in a while.
It's always, and that's how it seemed last season.
Boring, anxious.
Yeah, I would just like to just watch it. We'll come with you there. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll discuss that we'll be possibly expanded to 32 teams in college football. And we'll be back with more of this on GoMileHigh.com.